I mean, there's a lot of things that we don't have, but there's a lot of things that we do have. And the number one thing is great people and a quality of experience. And we focus on that. We focus on the relationships and what matters.
Back to another episode where I sit down with coaches from Merrimack College to discuss their careers up to this point, as well as their philosophy towards many different aspects of coaching and how they have become the coach they are today. In this week's episode, we have Coach Kelly Marone from women's basketball. I had a great talk with Coach Marone. She dove heavily into her coaching career, especially the last few years with their program going from Division II to Division I. I found it very interesting, her approach to recruiting. More specifically, her approach to recruiting the right kind of player and the ones that truly want to be a part of what she calls Chapter 1 of Division Basketball here at Merrimack College. Finding those players is what she believes will build the culture and grow the program to where it needs to be in its early stages. Coach Marone recognizes the challenges that come with being a new Division 1 program, and I was really impressed with how she overcomes that challenge. She discusses how she lays it all out on the table to her players, telling them that maybe you're not going to get all the glitz and the glam that you're going to get in an established D1 program. She played at an established D1 program herself, so she knows what that looks like. And she knows that maybe that all those extra perks aren't here yet as a new Division I program, but what you do get is an opportunity to be a part of something bigger than yourself, an opportunity to grow something, to start something new, and be a part of the founding group of this program to really build off of for years to come. Becker 2009 writes that when a relationship is formed through the proper communication, which includes honesty, empathy, and passion, these relationships are able to form out of love instead of fear. And that fear-based relationship is what we've talked about before with the old age of coaching. And that's how those relationships used to be formed, because the player believed that they had to have that relationship with the coach instead of letting that relationship form naturally and through proper communication and honesty. But from my talk with Coach Marone, it was super clear to me that she approaches her communication style in that exact same way. She understands how to communicate with her players. She understands that honesty is important and crucial towards building that relationship and having the right players come in. If you're not honest with the recruit, when they come in, they're going to find out pretty quickly that they were lied to, and that's a terrible way to start that relationship. And you want to be honest with them and let them know that what the program is in it for them and be ready for the challenges that come with that. But also there's a ton of upside that you can get with that. She's open and honest with that with her players, but she also understands that by communicating properly and using that empathy and that passion that she has towards her program, she's going to get the right players that want to be at in a part of our program and a part of Merrimack College as a whole. When I was talking with Coach Marone and listening to her insight into her coaching philosophy, one coach kept coming up in my mind that I pictured with a similar approach. And that coach is the coach of the San Antonio Spurs, Greg Popovich. Greg Popovich is one of the greatest coaches in NBA history. And he's still currently the coach of the San Antonio Spurs. I found this clip when I looked him up, of him talking about one of his players who has a Hall of Fame NBA career and just recently retired, Tim Duncan. I want you all to listen to how Coach Popovich talks about Tim Duncan. Listen to his tone of voice, his honesty, and his passion for his players. So with that, let's take a listen to this clip.
To help his program be the best, to help teammates be better. His humor, you know, his leadership, just his demeanor and his way of living his life made all of our lives so much easier. That's just who he is. He has his ways. There are times when I know when to coach him and when not to coach him, when he wants to hear something or he doesn't want to hear something.
Listening to this clip, I felt that same sort of passion from Coach Popovich that Coach Marone had towards her players and her program. Collins 2022 talks about how there's no one specific way to motivate your players. And from listening to Coach Popovich and talking with Coach Marone, it was clear to me that both of these talented minds understand that aspect of motivation. They're able to approach each player individually and understand what makes their relationship tick and create that special bond between them. We've talked about that bond a lot in this podcast series and in my paper as well, where you want to have that special relationship with with that coach to player, but it's not formed overnight. It's got to be formed organically and naturally. And both of these coaches talk about that approach. And it was clear to me from the quick interview I had with Coach Marone that she really understands that these relationships take time and you have to form them organically. But with all that being said, I'm going to turn it over to the interview itself with Coach Marone. I really want you listeners to listen to the passion in which Coach Marone talks with about our program and the way that she's clearly so excited for the possibilities, but also understands there's a process to that journey. So without further ado, here is Coach Marone. Today's guest is the head coach for the women's basketball team here at Merrimack College, Coach Kelly Marone. Coach Kelly just finished her second full season coaching the women's basketball team at Merrimack. However, she's been in the coaching industry for quite some time now. Coach Kelly was in an assistant role with a few different schools from 2005 to 2013 before taking on the head coaching job at John Carroll University from 2013 till 2020, when she became the seventh head coach in program history for women's basketball here at Merrimack College. Coach Kelly, I appreciate you taking the time to sit down and talk to me.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. Thanks for having me.
Of course. Just simple for start, how did you get into coaching, and was it something you always wanted to do?
No, I think I got bullied into it. When I was a student athlete, probably my sophomore year, the basketball suite was shared with the volleyball suite. And I remember talking with the volleyball coach. She goes, "What do you want to do when you grow up?" And I was like, "Wow, you know, I'm in sport and entertainment management. I picture myself in like a behind the scenes role or in an office role with a professional sports team." She's like, "Yeah, you're not going to do that. You're going to end up coaching." And she's like, "You might as well just accept it now." And basically that's the theme of how the rest of my college years went. They were like, "No matter what you do, you're just going to end up coaching. So lean into it." And that's what happened.
Wow. So you mentioned your playing career, and I saw you're a 3-year captain. So I guess just playing with that, like, did you always see that leadership was something that was instilled in you, or was that something you had to work on? Like a 3-year captain, that you don't see that every day, but what was that something that you always were kind of drawn to?
I think I had the gift of gab, and you know, my teammates, it was a lot of diversity, a lot of mixing of international players with American players, and something that you're familiar with. And I was kind of the piece that brought it all together from a communication standpoint and just a camaraderie standpoint, and an understanding that, like, let's wrap our arms around how cool this is that we have a team of so many different people with so many different makeups. And it just kind of worked out that way to me stepping into leadership role from a communication standpoint at first. And, you know, also I think I knew that the only way I was going to find my way onto the floor was if I added something more than just shooting. And that's what I was good at. I was good at, bringing out the best in other people, not necessarily that I brought these huge tangible things to the court. I did what I needed to do, but I played a bigger role from a coach on the floor standpoint. And that was my niche in getting more playing time.
Wow. That's a cool story, actually, for realizing you need something to bring more and able to get more playing time, maximize that. That's interesting. About Merrimack specifically, what intrigued you about coming to Merrimack? And I saw you're at your previous school. You were pretty, had some super successful years. What about Merrimack intrigued you for coming here?
I think that it was familiar to me in that it was an underdog story. Similar to South Carolina. I mean, basically I had to call South Carolina back after they were recruiting me at first. They pulled back for a couple months, and I called them back, and I realized I was probably fourth or fifth on their list, but I got my way in there and proved them wrong, right? Or rather, I proved myself right. And I felt similar at John Carroll, where, you know, when I got there, I think some of the stories were centered around the fact that, like, there would be a snack at midcourt that would be in full tact after practice because nobody had stepped on it. That's how unintense everything was. It was really treated more recreational than it was what it became, which was a national contender. And I, it was an underdog story again. You know, they hadn't won a championship, I think, in 45 years. And we won it that first year, not because I came in. It was a lot of right things happening at the right time. But, you know, we really, through a number of the players and the staff members that I've had, took that program and turned it around completely and made it a powerhouse. And I loved that piece of it. And then when I saw Merrimack's opening, I watched some of the interviews of the girls, and, you know, I watched film, and, you know, the story is very much, this is the first chapter of Division One, and it was a great entrance into it with the men's and women's team, obviously with pretty good success coming right out of the gate. But I like being a part of first chapters and writing a story and blazing a trail. And I think there's something cool behind building a sustainably successful program that people can get behind. And I think with the recruiting part of that too, Max, is you get to recruit people that also want that. You know, when you're like, you don't have all the bells and whistles. We're still building. We're not quite there yet when it comes to a full transition, but you can be a part of the first two. And what do you want? You know, what kind of legacy do you want to leave? And I'm drawn to those type of athletes. So a lot of it, just like I said, was very familiar. And I think that, you know, you're drawn to what you're drawn to at this point in my career, almost 20 years in, and I know that it works.
Yeah. And you mentioned a little bit of this in that answer there, but you mentioned that started the transition to the Division One from Division Two here. And I'm sure you knew coming in, there'd be challenges with that. Is that something that you kind of attack head on and embrace? And I think especially with your recruiting, you're making it sound like you put that out there and you make it well known that, hey, this isn't the glitz and the glamour that you may get at a top end school, but there are some things that you can approach with that are beneficial to you as a student. Is that something you kind of attack head on and embrace?
Well, I think too, not only why was I attracted to Merrimack, but why did Merrimack pick me? And, you know, coming from, yes, I have a Division I background as a player and as an assistant, but I was a Division III head coach. At Division III, there's a ton of challenges you deal with. And I think that, you know, Merrimack understood that I was capable of navigating through difficulty and finding success, that I wouldn't come in and have these expectations that were unrealistic, that, you know, where I'm expecting what a Division I program that's been established 20 years ago would have. So, you know, like I said, it was a fit in a lot of ways, but yeah, I mean, on my interview, I was asked this question. I was like, you know, I don't even know if you know this movie. Do you know the Green Mile? Or not the Green Mile. What's the Eminem movie?
8 Mile.
Oh, huh? 8 Mile, right?
Yeah.
And when he basically the last rap, he just lays it all out on the table and was like, yeah, Cheddar Bob shot himself and blah, 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 blah. Like that's kind of what we do with recruiting. Like, yeah, I mean, there's a lot of things that we don't have, but there's a lot of things that we do have. And the number one thing is great people and a quality of experience. And we focus on that. We focus on the relationships and what matters. I mean, you can play in a big gym, but if it's empty, it feels really lonely. Look at our gym. Our gym's packed with all of our students, other athletes, other sports teams. I mean, everybody comes out for you, and you gotta put the meat and potatoes in center focus for everybody to understand that if you choose the school for the wrong reason, you're going to be unhappy. And that's where the transfer portal really is highlighting. If you go too big, if you choose it for the wrong reason, if you choose a school for somebody else other than what you really want, you're going to end up leaving. And we try to get it right the very first time. And, you know, if somebody wants really bright and shiny, Merrimack isn't for them. But if somebody wants great days with great people and a way to set themselves up for success, this is. So we, yes, are very honest in the beginning pieces of it. Because if not, the minute they get here and they're going to look at you and go, "What? This isn't what you sold me."
Yeah, for sure. And you mentioned that like relationship aspect of your recruiting and even just getting to know your players when you came in. I saw an interview that you had when you first took the job here, that you're spending the majority of your first couple of days, first couple of weeks, just getting to know your players that were already on the roster. Why did you feel that to be so important to do as one of the first things you did as a head coach here?
I found that when I was a young coach as an assistant, I remember one of my colleagues was like, "You only care about the kids that play." And I was like, "Well, right. I mean, isn't that what I should be caring about?" And she's like, "No." And it took me a little bit to understand really what the foundation has to look like for success. And when I reflect back on my playing years, it was built on relationships. I mean, we weren't the most talented team in the SEC, and there weren't even a lot of us, but we top to bottom, 1 through 9, that was healthy that year. Like, everybody was treated each other the same, were respected the same, our roles were valued the same, no matter what they were. And that is part of the philosophy I carried into, the main philosophy I carried into John Carroll, where I'm like, man, these guys, they have no scholarships. I'm putting them through the same thing that I would put our Division I program through. They're doing the same time commitment. It's the same calendar season, right? Maybe 3 games less, but they get no spring break. They get 4 days at Christmas. Like, it's a lot, and they're doing it. They're paying for it. And I immediately had such respect for everybody. And I built relationships from 1 through, I mean, at one time max, I had 24 kids on my team. And it mattered when it came to the culture build, and it gets you through the years that you aren't winning, because you've got to have fun. You've got to have a light at the end of the tunnel where players can see, like, no matter, even though I'm not winning, I know I'm gaining something from this. I know I'm gaining a perspective on leadership. I'm gaining mentorship from a network I wouldn't have, et cetera, et cetera. And then the winning comes. And you mentioned that I'm in my second full season. I felt like this was my first season here at Merrimack.
Right.
And the pandemic was a completely different thing. Starting a new job with, like, nobody on campus. Yeah. And these players are staring at me through Zoom. And when I looked at them, I was like, oh my gosh, wins and losses don't even matter. They need to know that their world has just been rocked in so many ways. They've lost their coach after a successful season. Here I come in this scary time. They have no idea what to even count on. And I wanted them to be able to think that they can count on me, or at least know that I was going to be a constant and everything was going to be okay. Outside of that, nothing else really mattered. And that takes a lot of time. I mean, it didn't happen overnight. And I would still say we're really still in that process, because half my team was new this year. We had 8 new people. But at the core, players play at the top of their game for each other and for people that, for coaches that they trust, respect, and know have their best interests at heart. And you can only do that by getting to know each other.
Yeah, that's interesting. It sounds like you place a lot of emphasis on that culture component of, especially in a locker room, where, I mean, and I know from our team, it's like, you spend your whole life, basically, or your whole year with those players in that locker room. And if that culture and those relationships aren't formed in the right way, it can make for just for lack of a better term, just a crappy year. and you want to make have that focus on that. I guess my question to you for that is, like, culture is so important in the locker room. What is there little things that you want to focus on, or is there just a big picture you want to, or what is your approach to making sure that culture is right in the locker room?
You're asking a very, if I knew that answer, I'd write a book. That's the thing. I don't know what happens when I'm not around, you know, and I don't know what happens when that door is closed and I'm not in the locker room. So from my part, I focus on me being consistent every day, my assistants being consistent every day, and what we do and how we show up and how we communicate, and how we're there for the successes and the failures in the same way, with the same level of support from everybody from 1 to the end of the bench, and try and implore that they treat each other the same way. And there's got to be buy-in to that. And right now, Max, your peers, like, it's hard. It's your guys' buy-in is hard. And it's more difficult right now in 2022 than it was in 2018. And like this, I was just talking about this with my colleagues. It happens gradually that each wave of athletes changes. As you're talking about entering into coaching, like I wouldn't be able to give you advice from when I started because it's irrelevant now, totally irrelevant. And even 4 years ago, it was different type players, different teams, and what they accept is different. And I found that this wave has a difficult time of communicating with each other because things have changed so much, whether even just a small thing about not being in person in class for a year. Year and a half. And there's not just an automatic, I'm open to a relationship. I mean, there's a lot of players that are really, really guarded right now that they're more apt to let me into their lives than they are into each other's life. Right. And that's a very different change. And yeah, probably has happened for a number of reasons, but.
For sure. I guess like you mentioned that relationship aspect and how we need to make sure that that whole team is a unit. And this makes for kind of a more difficult question. I think I'm interested to hear your answer, but you're as a head coach, you're obviously across any sport, you're put in a position to make important decisions, whether it's lineup, roster cuts, recruiting, those big time decisions that happen mainly like all throughout the year. What is your approach, I guess, to these decisions? And when you have to have a tough conversation with your athletes about these decisions, how do you approach, I guess, that conversation?
Well, hopefully I've been approaching it all year, you know, and with truth and with honesty, but also with respect, and so that it doesn't come out of nowhere. You know, it's one of those, I want to be able to say, look, we've been talking about this and we've discussed your role in this team throughout the year and the things that needed to change to make it different for you and your happiness level. And where are you? And here's where I am, so that it's more of a dialogue than it is a decision and a reaction or a response to that. It takes more time. It takes a lot more care, but I think that that's what you should do. I don't think these huge decisions that change the course of a player's life or, you know, a team or, you know, any effect that a big ripple would have, should just be out of nowhere, out of the blue, a one-time thing. I think it should be definitely led into. And, you know, I don't stray away from hard conversations. And I also tell that in the recruiting process, I'm truthful to a fault. And you may not like what I'm saying, but you're going to know it's coming with the best intention, because hard doesn't necessarily mean it. You have to stay away from it and like avoid it. You're going to go through all these different hard conversations, awkward conversations, if you make them that way, if you just, again, lean into it and understand that there's intention behind it and you respond and don't react to it, you're going to grow way quicker. And that's what our job is at the end of the day, right? Is to take care of you guys, to make sure that when you leave our nest, you're ready to take on the world. And part of that is hearing things that you don't want to hear.
For sure. And I guess just building off of that, like, how do you make sure that those relations as a coach, and this is something I think the main reason I'm asking this question, I think it's something I'm going to struggle with. How do you make sure that those relationships that you focus on building throughout your recruiting process throughout their 4 years, how do you make sure that those relationships don't affect your decision-making process? Or I guess on the other hand, do you place an emphasis on basing those relationships you have with your players to make your decision?
So I equate this to parenting. I'm not a parent, but I can imagine this is how you feel. I believe that there's still, you know, players still think, well, coach has their favorite. It's really not true. When you dig in and you love everybody for who they are and their differences and what they bring, no matter what it is, you will treat everybody fairly, maybe not equally when it comes to what it looks like, you know,
right,
playing time and all that. You can't treat everybody equal, but you can treat them fair compared to relative to what they are bringing to the table and can do, et cetera, et cetera. But, you know, it will be difficult for you, Max, no matter what, for all the people that you care about to see disappointment and know that they will disappoint you and you undoubtedly will disappoint them. It will happen. But if you operate with a genuine care and thought and know that it's just a matter of, you know, it's your responsibility to make big decisions. And that's not going to always include everybody in a way that they may think they want to be included. But you can still bring them along in the fold if you're truthful throughout. So yes, you will. And in coaching, you will have a lot of heartbreak and it will be very difficult to make people grow as you care about them. And at points they're going to really dislike you.
Yeah, no, I totally get that. I think you see that across every sport, no matter what. It's some of those decisions, whether those decisions change a little bit and what specifically they are, I think that the same result will is kind of in place. In terms of, I guess, those decisions, you mentioned this earlier, you've mentioned how you had to reflect on a lot of stuff throughout your career. And especially these decisions, I guess, and conversations that you've had, do you do a reflection after the fact as well, saying, hey, maybe I didn't say this the right way, or is that kind of shaped the way you approach those conversations, or really anything, I guess, in terms of reflection?
I mean, I try to be proactive and reactive at the same time. I mean, I think one of my favorite things to say is, I want to respond to situations and not react to them, because I think that's where coaches get in trouble, right? When we're too high or we're too low and we communicate through that instead of taking a breath and actually giving a good response. I've been told I overthink things. One of my players goes, you worry too much. And I was like, what do I mean? She's like, you just worry too much. I mean, it is what it is. Things work out. And I'm like, I would love for that to be, but it takes a lot more thought than that. I feel like if you're going to lead a group of people, you're not going to be perfect. And if there's very little times that I celebrate anything that I accomplish, because I feel like I've had so many more failures than successes. And if I'm not constantly correcting myself, challenging myself, making myself better, reflecting, trying to predict, then I can't get ahead and of the crowd and lead the way that I need to from the front. And so that's a constant, and it's a skill that you have to really work on, and you'll be different at it in your early stages in your career than you will later on in life. But it's something that you have to be really in tune with. And I put at the forefront of my leadership role.
For sure. And you've talked about a little bit, your assistant coaches and the roles you've instilled with them. How do you approach, I guess, those relationships with them and instilling that trust within you guys as a staff as a whole, I guess?
Everyone requires something different, and they all bring different things to the table that are their strengths and that are the things that they need to work on. It's even harder, if you can imagine, Max, to have relationships with your colleagues, and that you care about, that you need, but also advise them what's good for them in their career.
Right.
And it's not always you, you know, it's not always you, and it's not always this particular circumstance. It's not always the position that they thought that they wanted. You know, it's you. You have to, sometimes their first, at Merrimack, a lot of times we're getting young coaches and we're their first positions. And, you know, you have people that come in like, all right, I'm ready. This is what I want to do. This is exactly where I need to be. And you're like, yeah, you're not, these are the things you need to take on. And you aren't even ready for those, but we're going to get you ready. And it's like a slap in the face. You go from being a senior to a rookie all over again. A lot of times. So it's a totally different process with molding coaches into the mentors that they need to be. But again, that's built on relationships and trust. And, you know, you're in a very vulnerable position when you're working on a staff, because you're serving everybody else except yourself if you're doing it the right way. And that's a hard realization to go from player to coach when you realize it's no longer about you at all. And, you know, managing that is always an interesting thing. And then I've worked with some older coaches too, that bring great experience, that, you know, maybe I'm younger than, and say they give you advice or a suggestion and I go in the opposite direction. You're looking at yourself like, man, did I just disrespect somebody? And the answer is no. Like, it's your job. It's your job to decipher between all these different opinions on a staff and make sure that it's the right one for the team without worrying about whether or not you've disrupted somebody's confidence. So it's just a very interesting dynamic. I remember my mom always asked me that. She goes, how do four or five people on a staff in a 30-second timeout come up with the same answer? The answer is we do not. A lot of times it is like you get three things thrown at you or two things thrown at you. You pick and you move on. And not everybody's heard. And that's an interesting balancing act to have.
For sure. And I guess you spent quite a few years as an assistant coach yourself. Did that time as an assistant kind of help shape your approach to how you handle your assistants now, or is that something you look back on and try to pull things from?
Well, yes, it definitely did. I think I loved being in a lot of different conferences, and I worked for a lot of different people, and I worked with a lot of different people. And at the time, some of my mentors were like, well, I mean, you don't want to look like you jump around. And I was like, I'm not jumping around. The circumstances are what they are. And at one point, my first job, the recruiting coordinator position came open, and I was passed over for it. So I was like, I'm going to find one. So I did. And then, two of my bosses were fired, which means the assistants were let go. So that's out of my control as well. At one point in my career, I had a hard time with the culture of the program and didn't feel great about bringing players into it. And I decided myself to leave. And I thought that I was operating with integrity in doing that. So like all these different experiences, the different conferences, the different people you work with, it really shapes your, what I want to do, what I don't want to do. And 100% the way I was treated as an assistant is absolutely at the core of how I am a boss and the things that were important to me and the things that were a detriment to me. And, you know, what I would have appreciated is at the forefront of how I treat people. I mean, just kind of, yes, common courtesy, but even just go a little bit further and understand that your staff gives everything to you too. You know, the assistants have to give up themselves to the players, but they also have to give up themselves to the head coach. So anything that I can do to make them feel appreciated every day and little things, it could be, hey, you know, don't even come in until 10. We don't have to start our day at 8. You do everything late at night. It could be, you know, oh, let me know the personal things you have coming up. We'll work around you. Right. It doesn't matter, but a little goes a long way. And your past experiences will always, I think, shape what your presence should be. And if you don't remember how it feels to be an assistant, you need to at least like go back into your wheelhouse and again, reflect through all the different experiences you had. And I think I blacked out some of them, but that's, I don't know. I think you can't just get into a power position and say, well, now this is how it's going to be and forget where you came from.
For sure. I guess with that, sound like you mentioned that timeout example, and I think part of being with the staff, and maybe I'm wrong, there's going to be criticism from time to time within each other, as long as it's constructive in a way. And this happens with players as well, from coach to player. How do you approach like athletes on your team differently depending on, or do you approach athletes differently depending on how they respond to certain types of criticism, or is that approach the same no matter who the athlete or player is?
No, it's everything's so different. And this, it changes year to year. It changes player to player. It changes daily, honestly. I think at this point, there has to be a really keen awareness of tolerance and need and wellness. So, you know, say I'm talking to Ashley, and Ashley on day one is capable of hearing something hard. But on day two, she's gone through a day already before I see her, and maybe less receptive to harsh communication and needs to be met with a little bit more patience, et cetera, et cetera. I mean, if you do a one communication, one leadership style fits all, I think you're way behind where coaching has evolved to. And again, this goes back to the relationship piece of it. You have to know your players. You have to know them. That you can no longer just say, I'm the coach, you're the player, this is how it's going to go. That doesn't work. And nobody's here for that anymore. And I think a lot of older coaches are frustrated with that, but I think it's a great thing. I think it forces a different type of presence, and you can see how teams, they almost take on a certain personality. Like right on campus, you can go, oh, that's a hockey player. I know you guys. I know, not that I know all of you on the roster, but I can feel the presence of a hockey team because you guys all have, I don't know how to say it, like a specific charisma about yourself that has clearly been taken on, you know, through that culture building process and through the relationships you have with Scott and the coaches. And it's built with care and individuality. And I think that's celebrated too more now, as opposed to back in the day when it was kind of one size fits all. Yeah, every player is unique and everybody brings something different to the table. And that's something that we want to embrace. So how possibly could you treat everybody the same or communicate the same with them when it comes to constructive criticism or celebration or, you know, challenging and motivating to do more?
Sure. And you've talked about this kind of how the coaching industry has evolved. What do you think is like the major things? I mean, you mentioned relationships and is that the biggest one, I guess, in terms of your approach to coaching from the beginning to now?
No, it is more so what is not going to be tolerated by athletes. In my year one, what a team and one athlete would be willing to tolerate is totally different than now. So you've read all the articles, running was a thing. If you didn't rebound, you just ran. Well, now running is like, it's viewed as a form of abuse.
Right.
And it's reality, not to say that everybody who views it that way, but there's a lot of things that you have to handle with care. And you know, Max, you could be in a locker room in a heated moment and somebody could be recording you, right? And you've got to be sure that no matter what you are doing, but how you are leading is, you could do in front of your priest and your boss and everything else. And it's not just okay to demand, you know, you can't just demand anymore. You have to command. You have to command attention in a way that they want to pay attention to you. You have to command in a way that leaders want to also lead like you do. And it takes a lot more thought, and it's not just rolling the ball out, blowing your whistle and saying, this is the way it's going to be because this is the way it's always done.
Yeah, all right. That totally makes sense. And you touched on this a little bit earlier with, you mentioned you try to treat that that Division III program like a D1 school. But was there any major differences, I guess, in your approach, if any, I guess, in your approach from how you went about your day-to-day, I guess, business with those two programs?
No. In the operations of it, no. I mean, some things were just innately different because of the setup of, you know, how things go. But no, I mean, if anything, it really humbled me, that whole experience. I was like, I had players that just didn't play the same that I do at Division I. The difference at Division III is they were paying $40,000 a year to go there and have this experience. And they were at the end of the bench, not playing. And how possibly could you not be humbled by that? when a lot of times they were my best leaders. They were the ones that were, you know, fine being on scout team. They were the ones that were, you know, I learned that your starters are supposed to do what they're supposed to do, but you win with the end of your bench. You just do. Like your championship seasons is when the end of your bench is really strong, and our leaders and our understanding of their role and appreciative of just of the opportunity and the bigger things that come with being an athlete that have nothing to do with on the court, because they don't even get on the court, you're going to be in a great place. So that is really what I took away from that experience. I remember before the championship game, I'll never forget it, this kid was in front of my desk and she was writing on this note card, and I'm like, what are you doing? And she was so cute. She became such a good leader, and she was a huge piece of the season that we won both championships. And she goes, Coach, I'm writing out my cue card. I said, what cue card? She goes, well, I got different acts that I do when, you know, when so-and-so hits a three or when so-and-so does a block, like I've got these different routines on the sideline. Maybe you should, you know, check me out sometime, like get out. But it was the funniest thing. And she did. I mean, she made the environment fun. She made that the fact that players weren't playing, she made it okay for them, which made it okay for me. Right. And it was just an incredible experience. And I said to myself, if I do end up at Division I again, I'm going to look at the end of the bench very differently, because my expectations can be really, really high. Cause you do have a scholarship, and I know a lot of women that didn't, and that were in your same role and that made the most of it. And they got out of collegiate athletics what they needed to, the most important things that they needed to. And I'm going to expect that of you. So no, I think I treat both the same. And if anything, I came into Merrimack with a higher standard than I would have if I wasn't at John Carroll.
For sure. And just, I guess my last question for you today is, and it's one I'm just simply kind of curious about, is if you had one tip you would want to give to any aspiring coach looking to get in the industry, what would that be? If you could say one thing.
Tip or expectation? I would say,
we'll do one of each, if that works.
Yeah, I gotta give you one of each. So the expectation is, it's gonna hurt. It's gonna hurt. But the hurt is worth it. And I think the tip is understanding that you have a group of people that are going to disappoint you in some way, in some level. And that's the hardest thing for young coaches to understand. You know, you'll go, how do they not get it? Or like, why would they have done this? Don't they understand? And the answer is no to all those things. They're at an interesting time in their lives. And as college athletes, you're like the most selfish people on earth, And you're going to give and give and give as a coach, and they're going to take and take and take way more than they give back to you. And you've got to be able to unpack that and not bring it home. And remember that what you're giving to them is something that you also need to give to your personal life. And because their personal life is going to give it back to you.
Yeah, no, that totally makes
sense.
No offense. No, that's actually perfect. That's totally it's what everyone needs to hear, and it's the truth. So, well, listen, Coach, I really appreciate you taking the time to sit down with me today. It was really interesting to me to be able to listen to you talk about your approach to relationships, just your approach to coaching, and the journey, I guess, you've taken to where you are today. Thank you for taking the time to talk with me, and I wish you and your program the best going forward.
You're welcome. Thank you.